Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You don't need nothing. Oh, high class niggas.
This shit sound crazy. This shit sound crazy.
Flash it on them.
You know what I'm saying?
This $1,000 pair of shoes, you don't need nothing. This $1,000 purple lane, you don't need nothing. Just $500,000 car, you don't need nothing. I came up from bottom, you don't need nothing. My niggas all ride with me, you don't need no. Got killers with me right now, you don't need no. This $1 million watch, nigga, you don't need no. Got $1 million crib, nigga, you don't need no.
Hey, that monster truck, sit tall as fuck, so big, can't even talk. Don't like snakes, keep my grad cut so low, can't even more. Tip done, period, look high, glow, no, we don't do more. Ain't PJ, no rose for me, host don't even pour. Spent some time for it, putting down Michael Kors. Always on like the refrigerator, unplugged, then, oh, you know it. AP and that P-Gate with a bright lean when on board. Got a masterpiece and a 41 millimeter, you ain't even know it. Keep the 45 in my pocket, I ain't gon' show it till I have to pop it, then you gon' know it. Damn, who shot you, they don't even know it. Hawks game, fucking Floyd. TVC, front row it. Rock go to Dunn, CEO it. Ain't got a rapper, you know it.
This $1,000 pair of shoes, you don't even know it. This $1,000 purple lane, you don't even know it. Just $500,000 car, you don't even know it. I came up from bottom, you don't even know it. My niggas all right with me, you don't even know it. Got killers with me right now, you don't even know it. This $1 million watch, nigga, you don't even know it. Got $1 million crib, nigga, you don't even know it.
That nigga show you that re-rock. You don't even know it. I die over these Reeboks.
Hey, it's Jose Galison. You're watching No Way Jose. You can find me on the No Way Jose YouTube channel, all the major audio podcatchers, and Odyssey as well. Credit to my friend, my Twitter homie, at Jolly on McVeigh. He's the guy who put that edit together. Surprisingly, it's one of the first times it wasn't a Jinx edit, although Jinx is the fucking man as well. Jolly, I would assume, probably kind of followed in his footsteps for that one. I know he's a big fan of Jinx as well. So I'm sure he'll be pleased to hear me, you know, kind of put lump the two together. But today, if you guys couldn't tell by the intro, it's clearly JFK oriented. I'm doing a JFK series. We're starting off, and my guest is Matt Crumpton. I do want to let you guys know what the deal is. So with the how this works with the Patreon and all, right now I'm not doing the public live streams anymore. I stopped doing those. These are only private live streams. I still do the public ones for things like Four Pony Boys, which next week, which I guess by the time it comes out will already be it already have happened. But I have Shane Cashman, who's a journalist for Timcast. He will be on the Four Pony Boys with me, Top Lobster, Clint Russell, and Reed might show up. I haven't got a confirmation. Depends on what his work schedule is like that day. But, go check that out. If you're watching this publicly, you can, it'll already be out, so you can check it out and see if you like it. I'm not entirely sure what we'll talk about, but it should be a fun episode. He's an interesting fella. But if you want to be able to have access to that content, be able to watch the live streams or just watch it after and have the content in the meantime, because I do roughly, what I'll do is I'll put it behind the paywall, and about a week or so later, I'll put it up publicly. If you want to have access to it, it's patreon.com. So it's NoWayJose2020. The lowest level is $2. The highest level is 20. The 20 is my sponsors. Sponsors are Mikkel Thorpe of the Expat Money Show. He also does it as a business, so go check him out. If you want to get the hell out of Dodge, he's your guy. If you want to get a passport to another country, have dual citizenship, whatever, he's your dude. He also does a show, like I said, the Expat Money Show. I have Jeremy, who has an Etsy store, etsy.com/shop/raisingliberty. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeremy Rhymes. I have Toad, who's my co-host on Tower Gang. You can follow him. I think it's at Tower Gang Toad. You know, go check that out. We'll be on Timcast on January 17th, which I'm not sure if this should drop before then. So, make sure to be there to support that. It should be fun. I think we're sending Clinton top, and we're still up there, about a third. Might get Fat Dave in there. I also have Zach Overacker, and you can follow him on Twitter at Zoverack, Zoverack, I guess is the way you could say it. Also toplobster.com. You can get my merch, you can get Tower Gang merch, you can get, you know, a bunch of other shows merch as well. He's really cornering the market there. He also has stuff that's not show related, so I highly suggest go check it out. A lot of good stuff. He's the man. So use Jose at checkout for 10% off. But let's go ahead and get into it and get Matt in here. Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, pleasure to have you. We'll start off. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself? Let them know about yourself. Maybe give them your pedigree if you have one, or just, you know, what kind of drew you into JFK, et cetera, et cetera. And then we'll go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Jose. My name is Matt Crumpton. I am an attorney by trade. I worked at a big law firm for about 3 years out of law school, got laid off. Started my own firm representing musicians and small business owners. And then after that, my parents and I bought a calzone franchise called DP Dough. There's one in Tampa right now, actually. Oh. I was the CEO of the DP Dough calzone franchise for 7 years, sold that, bought some other stuff, bought a burrito chain and a campground. And working it on opening a music venue in Columbus, Ohio. And the other thing that I do is I'm a deep researcher on the JFK assassination. And I just started the Solving JFK podcast after about 20 years of diving into it and 2 years of writing scripts and outlines and researching so that I had like citations and stuff. So that's kind of the general background. How I got into it. I was a student teacher at like everybody in the world, you see, you know, you hear about it as a kid, unsolved mysteries or whatever it is. And then you go, wait a minute, they killed the president. They have a video and his body's going back into the left, but they say shot from the back. That's weird. And then wait a minute, the guy that they say killed him, somebody killed that guy the next day. And then that guy like got sudden cancer or whatever in prison and died. Like, it's just, it didn't add up. It's immediately, I was like, I don't know about that. The way I got into it more, it was when I was a senior in college, I was an education major. So I got to student teach, and I was my last semester in college, I was student teaching 1960 to present American history, sophomore. So it was like so easy, the same class 4 times a row. And so I was told I could do a week, like deep dive on a subject for a week. And I did the JFK assassination because I had the most videos. So I just did videos. I just like got hammered like every night before. Yeah, I was 21 years old. What are you going to do? But then in my hungover stupor, I'm like, this is actually pretty interesting because people say such, they say things that don't make sense. You know what I mean? Like, and they're all so intense about it, you know? So anyway, that stoked my interest just in knowing, like seeing kind of like we were talking about before, like the depth of the JFK assassination. It's so cloudy. There's so many roads. That was when I got the first view of like, oh my gosh, I gave up because it was, you know, the jungle of who it could be was too much. And I just couldn't figure it out. So I was like, yeah, there's something there, but I just don't know what it is. And I don't want to say the wrong thing. So, and then E. Howard Hunt's confession kind of hooked me back a little bit. I read in Rolling Stone. And that was just weird. It's, you know, I mean, obviously when someone who's from the CIA tells you, here's what we did, you gotta be a little skeptical that it's in good faith. You know, interesting nonetheless. And then, I read a book called JFK and the Unspeakable, in 2000, like right after it came out. And that's when I was like, oh, this is a conspiracy. It's 1000% a conspiracy done with certainty. So that's when I was like talking. I'm like, hey guys, what do we, you know, wake up my wife in the middle of the night. Let me tell you about Ralph Yates. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy stuff. And then I went on the Facebook groups just to try to, like, find more, like, like-minded people. Let's, like, let's drill in the last few details and solve this. And I just got shellacked by everybody in the world who's like, what are you talking about, you psycho? Clearly, the Warren Report got it right. Oswald acted alone. This fact. So there were so many facts against Oswald that I never knew. Like, if you come up in the, like, you watch the movie JFK, obviously that was another big thing, the movie JFK. You watch that, and then you go, well, it's obviously a conspiracy. There's literally no reasonable person who could think it's not a conspiracy. But there is evidence. Now, is that evidence manufactured is a different conversation. But evidence exists in the record. You know, there's you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it. But yeah, so anyway, that's a long-winded answer to how I got involved.
Yeah, no, that's a... That first name, what would you say, Hunt? That was the guy who admitted to being one of the fellow assassins, right? Isn't that one of them? I remember I did a little bit of looking into it.
He said that his role was a bench warmer that day. He was there in Dallas, and he drew a basically he drew on a piece of paper what the hierarchy was, and he put LBJ at the top, and then he put Cord Meyer, who was, I think, the deputy director of plans, or I don't want to say the wrong thing exactly, but I'm not on that at this moment in time. but any rate, Cord Meyer, and then LBJ, Bill Harvey, who a lot of people, he's been sort of a suspect for a long time. And then he said French shooter Grassy Knoll. Mm-hmm. So basically he said that the CIA was involved, and essentially E. Howard Hunt's story is the same story as Rolf Moat Larsen, this guy who's been making rounds. He was on Crystal and Sagar. And is basically the story. We're kind of getting into semantics a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what some of these arguments are. I mean, some people say it's a limited hangout, but I mean, if the whole thing's pretty much hanging out, how limited is it? So anyway, mm-hmm. What the argument is, it wasn't the CIA as an institution, and it wasn't even the former leadership of the CIA. It was a little side operation that got turned, you know, without anyone's knowledge. And the real dispute there is Alan Dulles. Mm-hmm. The real dispute is to what extent was E. Howard Hunt doesn't mention Dulles, and he doesn't mention himself. That's kind of those are two reasons to, you know, suspect him. Or to question the complete veracity of what he's saying anyway.
Yeah, I think at this point, like with the JFK thing, I think it's borderline undeniable to some extent there was a cover-up by the CIA. Now, does that mean they actually perpetrated it, or did they do it themselves? Were they in cahoots with other people to do it? Who knows? Because like one example I frequently bring up when we talk about, because people will see a cover-up and they'll jump to, well, obviously these people did it. Now, one example is like 9/11. Now, maybe the CIA was involved or the FBI. I forget which. I mean, I kind of conflate the two so often. But I know for a fact, if you look into it, there was a ton of weird craziness among like Saudis, where we did stuff where we covered up records. We moved Saudis out of the country. We did things to be able to kind of cover up their involvement to whatever extent it may be. But that doesn't necessarily mean they did it. It was obviously a geopolitical thing. There was, at the very least, it was a geopolitical thing. There was like, hey, these are our close allies that we don't want to, you know, do it. Like, I know me and Clint, we talked the other day, and we were just kind of, you know, shoot the shit, talk about it. And like, say, for example, the Russians killed JFK for whatever reason. Let's say that's the case. It could
6% of people think that's what happened.
Yeah. It could be very well that, like, say the Russians did it all by themselves. I could 100% see a scenario where the CIA covered that up because they, for whatever reason, did not want to accelerate whatever, you know, was going on, you know, geopolitically with Russia to that extent. It's a possibility. I'm not saying that's what happened at all, but I'm just saying a cover up necessarily means that person did it doesn't logically follow, but it does make you look bad for sure.
There's a conversation between Lyndon Johnson and I believe it's Richard Russell. It might have been Earl Warren himself, but it's recorded. And basically, Johnson talks about what he had been told about Oswald going to Mexico City and meeting with the Russians and meeting with the Cubans. And basically now we're getting into, if people are hitting me up with that's actually bullshit, blah, blah. I'm just giving the overview. So the devil's in the details, and you got to provide your receipts. And, you know, we'll probably be getting to this with receipts at some point. But just the overview is that Johnson told everybody in the Warren Commission that Russia did it. It was a conspiracy. It's Oswald with Russia. We have to cover that up. Because if not, he said, I want to take this out of the public arena and get it away from a situation where we could have 40 million Americans dead in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So he's basically saying, like, the American people are going to demand nuclear retaliation, so we have to cover it up, because then they're going to retaliate against us, and, you know.
Yeah, which, I mean, it makes sense, but that doesn't mean the CIA actually had a hand. Now, my thinking is they likely did, but I don't know. You know, the same thing kind of applies with OKC. It's like, I think it's, like, undeniable as well, even to a greater degree with OKC, that the feds covered up. I think you're just a fool if you say otherwise, honestly, if you understand the details of OKC. Now, whether they, if I was to say, I'd say it's like 100% chance it's a cover up. It's like probably an 80%+ chance they had a hand in it, to be honest, is my opinion after looking through all of it. But I can't say that with certitude for sure.
I've read the first maybe 150 pages of Aberration in the Heartland of the Real. Mm-hmm. I want to dive back into that. I got sidetracked on some JFK stuff, but there's a lot there. I would encourage people to look into it, because, you know, I'm sure you get accused of this all the time. I do as well. And, you know, being a lawyer, I'm trying really hard to keep my foot in the world of credibility here. But I think if people look into these issues and they understand what the primary sources are, this is not like, you know, some GeoCities website or like, you know, someone's friend's cousin's uncle. We're talking about FBI reports. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing as the JFK assassination. We're talking about 26 volumes of evidence for the most part. Yes, there's some stuff after the fact, and then there's evidence that came from other investigations. But, you know, obviously for various reasons that we're all aware of, there are efforts to paint any dissenting views of current affairs or history as being crazy, kooky, and unacceptable. So yeah, we should fight that, which you're fighting the good fight on that.
Yeah, I actually surprisingly have. I don't think I've ever gotten any pushback whatsoever. I have. It's funny, like Richard has, like my guest, and I'm sure maybe you will as well. But I don't think I ever try to put on an air that I'm that guy. I'm just a dude talking, and I usually do try to couch things I say and like, well, here's an alternative explanation. This could be that. These are just my thoughts. I'm speculating, what have you. But at the end of the day, if you come at me and be like, well, it says this, I'm like, I don't care. I'm not the guy that's like, well, here's this source. I'm just like, okay. Yeah, like, I mean, that's me.
Right. Yeah, the question is, what could you prove in court? You know, what do you have evidence? If you make a claim that's a factual proposition, you should be able to have some evidence to back it up, and then someone can disagree with you, and you can argue about what the evidence means and what the inferences are about regarding that evidence. There you go.
Yeah, I guess I see myself as like a go-between like guys like you and Richard, who do really take painstaking effort to make sure you have sources and back it up. Because, you know, if someone wants to get upset about it, they can go to you. But I mean, I think it's pretty clear I'm the guy that's just kind of, you know, I'm like the go-between is the way I see it. So, I mean, if you want to get upset with me, I just don't care. But let's go ahead and get into it. I want to start off with, we're going to just do basics this episode, because, like, I do think a lot of people, surprisingly, just don't even know the basics, probably even myself included to some extent. So I want to start off with, I think the best place to start off with is just, what is the official narrative, generally speaking, of what happened? And you can take that as far as you want, but generally speaking, I just want to give people an idea of what event we're talking about, what happened, kind of the course of events.
Right. Okay, so this is the official story. Lee Harvey Oswald got a job at the Texas School Book let me start a little earlier. Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Marines. He then defected. He left the Marines and defected to Russia. He was there for, a little over a year or so. He came back to the United States. He lived in Dallas, where he had, you know, he lived in New Orleans and Dallas, where he had just some different day labor jobs. Basically, he worked at a map making company that required a security clearance, incidentally. Then about a month before the assassination, 5 weeks, I think, before the assassination, he got a job at the Texas School Book Depository building. He had a wife that he brought back from Russia, Marina, and he had a 2-year-old daughter at the time. He had a 2-week-old on the day of the assassination, 2 or 3 weeks old. She was an infant. So he had two girls. The story is that he's working at the school book depository and Kennedy's coming in town and his motorcade's going to go straight through the middle of Dallas. And that's where Dealey Plaza is. The school book depository is basically on the corner of Dealey Plaza. If Dealey Plaza is like an upside down triangle with the tip at the bottom and, you know, the flat part at the top, Dealey Plaza will be on the left side. So Oswald, the story is that he shot from the 6th floor, 3 shots, and with a Mannlicher Carcano bolt action rifle. And the first shot the first shot missed and hit the curb, hit bystander James Tagg. The curb kicked up and nicked him. And he was standing under the overpass, one street over. And then the second shot is the so-called magic bullet the story is it came through Kennedy's hit the top of his back, the bottom of his head, basically top of his neck, middle of his neck. Actually, it's more like the bottom of his neck. The story is that he's leaning forward is what they say. It hit his neck. And then it comes out his throat where the throat wound was, and then goes into Connolly's back, shatters one of Connolly's ribs, then goes into Connolly's right wrist, and then ends up being embedded in his left thigh. There's so many rows to go. I'm like, well, let me talk about that. Anyway, so just continuing on the basic story. Okay, so that's the second shot. Third shot is the headshot. So then Kennedy goes to Parkland Hospital and he's pronounced dead at 1 o'clock. Oswald subsequently gets on a bus. Then he gets off the bus because it's in traffic. And then he gets on a taxi, takes that taxi to his rooming house, which is a whole different story. Why did he have a rooming house? I know that's weird. He's there for just a few minutes, you know, 5 minutes or so, give or take. And he leaves the lady that runs his rooming house saw him. She gives great testimony in the Warren report, in the Warren Commission volumes. And anyway, so then the story is that he then leaves, walks down through Oak Cliff, kills Officer J.D. Tippett, and then goes to hide in the Texas Theater where he's arrested. He then goes he's taken him to the police station. And he's there for questioning for a few days, although there's no tape recordings of the interviews. There are at least interrogation transcripts or interrogation written notes. But that Sunday morning, he's taken to be transferred. He's scheduled to be transferred and he's shot and killed by Jack Ruby. So that's the general story.
All right. I do want to take a moment to dovetail with the official narrative because I feel like at a certain point it almost takes two forks because I think a lot of people focus on, when it goes, you know, Oswald, what happened to him, Jack Ruby. Now, I do want to just kind of get a summation of the official narrative of, you know, from the perspective of like JFK and like his motorcade and like the people with him. What happens at that point? Because I know there's things with like the, you know, where he ends up in the hospital, et cetera, et cetera. I think you probably know where I'm getting at. Because I just want to let people know that side of things. I'm sure we'll probably dig into that at some point, but I just want to make sure we're kind of setting the stage here before we get into it later.
Yes, he goes to, he's taken to Parkland Hospital. He's pronounced dead. There are many doctors who see him there. The testimony and the written medical evidence of those doctors initially contradicted the final evidence, but we can talk about that later. So then his bot. So then LBJ is sworn in on the plane. This is where you have the famous picture of Jackie standing next to him in the blood soaked, suit, and the guy, I forget his name, but the guy smiling and winking at him on the plane. I don't know if you've ever seen that picture. It's pretty creepy. Picture this guy winking and smiling at him as he's being sworn in, and she's sitting there just covered in blood. But anyway, so then the plane left. There's the whole thing of the David Lifton theory of, were there two caskets and the timing of the arrival and all that. And there is some stuff there, to that. To be honest with you, I've done the research on it, and it is coming up this season, but it's the medical evidence is going to be 6 episodes when we do it. It's real, real dense. There's a lot of material, but what I remember from that, the whole body swapping conversation, yes, there is some evidence for it, but it's not definitive and it's not necessary. It's just like an extra side. It's like a red herring to me. So it's kind of like one more thing that if that's true, that's crazy, but you don't have to believe that's true to think there's a conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, all right. Now I want to focus on the characters. I think in my head, there's 3 main characters, really. I guess maybe you could say a 4th, like London or maybe Dulles or something. But I think the 3 main people really care about is obviously Kennedy, Oswald, Ruby. So I want to start with Kennedy. I know it sounds super simple, but like I said, we're setting the stage here. I want to go with who was Kennedy? And then I kind of want to lead into kind of like what kind of enemies has he made and who would have motivations to want him dead? And obviously, I'm assuming in the who is Kennedy, we'll probably get an idea of maybe the kind of feathers he's ruffled,
Sure, yeah. Okay, so Kennedy is, he comes from a wealthy family. His dad was involved in the alcohol business during the Prohibition era. His dad wanted to be involved in politics. His dad was ambassador to England, I believe under FDR, but I could be mistaken. His brother was the big guy that was supposed to be the political star, his older brother, and his older brother was killed in World War II. So he ran for, he was in the Navy. He was a PT-109, a big movie about his, basically his boat was attacked and he, saved a lot of people on his ship. Anyway, this is the story that's been passed down, the legend that's been passed down. He was a senator. He was a congressman. Then he was a senator. So he ran in 1960 versus Richard Nixon. And he was more hawkish than Nixon during the election. So like history is nuanced. People want to be able to go, aha, Kennedy was a hawk, so he wasn't going to get out of Vietnam. Well, there's proof he was going to get out of Vietnam, but he was also trying to win an election.
Yeah, and Western promises don't mean shit.
Right. And what's funny is Nixon, and he was like, basically saying that Nixon was too weak on Cuba. Little did he know that they had the Bay of Pigs hooking up. Like Nixon was getting ready to invade, and he's like, shut up. Like, stop, you're giving it away. Kennedy was by no means was he like, he wasn't Tulsi Gabbard or whoever. He wasn't like coming in like no regime change wars or whatever. He was a pretty fairly run-of-the-mill politician at that point when he got elected. Now by the time he was assassinated, I think he was materially different than anything else we've really seen. I mean, Trump is a different conversation, okay, but I don't want to compare Trump to Kennedy. So that's who Kennedy is. Obviously there's, we could talk about the beginning of his, obviously you've got the Bay of Pigs. So let's talk about the enemy. All right, so, and while also talking about Kennedy at the same time. All right, so one of the first things that happens is the Bay of Pigs. And basically Kennedy was given a plans that had already been drafted that Nixon was going to do. And this happened in April of 1961, just months after he had been inaugurated.
Real quick, Nixon was running for re-election, correct?
Correct. Nixon was a vice president under Eisenhower. Oh, okay. He just served two terms as vice president.
So it was like in his head, almost assumed he was going to get it. So he had drafted these plans.
Eisenhower really liked to play golf. Like, he's like, I like Ike, but Ike likes golf. Yeah. Like, he gave his whole portfolio to Nixon, pretty much. So anyway, especially when it comes to Cuba. Hmm. So, all right, Bay of Pigs happened. So Bay of Pigs is pitched to Kennedy. And he basically says, like, okay, that's fine. The idea is Cuban exiles are going to fight to get their homeland back, and we're going to facilitate that, right? Just like the same thing, America. Oh, we're going to provide the weapons, but we're no boots on the ground, right?
Yeah.
And the whole conversation was around air support, right? And so Kennedy said, that's a line. I'm not going to do that, because if we have air support, it's going to be clear that the United States did it. It's an escalation. It could lead to nuclear war. Like, that's a line I'm not willing to cross. He told Allen Dulles that. Dulles nonetheless went forward with the plan. Everybody who was involved in the operation believed there was going to be air support the whole time. There was no conversation as to, you know, well, it depends on if the president approves. It was, hey, no, this is approved. So it came time to make that decision. They're losing. And they said, what's the call, Mr. President? No, I told you you can't do it. No, I said, no, we're not doing it. So all these people died or were captured in the Bay of Pigs, and that made the Cuban exile community hated him. So there's your enemy number one, Cuban exile community, specifically the Cuban exile community that was already working with the CIA through various operations, Operation Mongoose and others, to pretty much foment discord in Cuba. I have a Jimmy Dore shirt that says "Fomenting Discord." So I had to, anyway,
to be clear, real quick on this Cuba thing, though, because a lot of people try to make the case that the Cuban government wanted to have him dead. Now, sure. I would say this sort of restraint would actually show a show of good faith, in my opinion.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The part of towards them to some extent, or maybe willingness to work or not to go too far or not to cross that line. So I know a lot of people try to make the case that maybe Castro, I guess maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit. I struggle to believe that Castro himself would necessarily want to assassinate JFK. Cause I think he probably would see this guy's not willing to cross this line. So why would I, this would only accelerate things further, you know?
Two points on that. First of all, Castro at the time of the assassination was having back channel conversations with Kennedy to have a sort of a new peace. They were getting really, really close, and things were going really well. And the second point is any conversation about Cuba, the government of Cuba being involved in the assassination, just like the Russian government being involved, is linked to information that's generated by the Central Intelligence Agency. So that's the official story. So it's an onion peel. Okay. I think this is Mark Lane's thing. So, again, if you listen to the podcast, I'm transparent that I lean towards there being a conspiracy. But I think I got to show receipts. So I'm still open to changing my mind as I go along. If someone can give me a receipt that changes my mind, that's cool. I'm down. But we go issue by issue. Anyway, what was the topic I was just about?
We were talking about Cuba just now. But I mean, if you want to go back to enemies in general, people who would want JFK to be dead, we can keep moving that way. You know, that's, you know, if you want.
Onion peel. I was talking onion peel.
Onion peel. Okay.
So here's what it is. There's the outside layer of the onion, okay? And that's this is from Mark Lane. There's the outside layer, and that's for the general public, this the low information people that believe the news, they don't need any more information, the history books, right? And that story is Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, okay? Then there's the next layer of the onion, which is that's for insiders who know that that's like, they think that's a ridiculous story, but they want to know what actually happened, right? And that is that it was Oswald. It was a conspiracy, but the conspiracy is that it was Oswald with the Russians and the Cubans. And that's that's the whole point of Mexico City. The whole point of Mexico City is, you know, look, if it was a conspiracy, then a lot of evidence had to be fabricated. That's one of the hardest that, like, people who think that there's no conspiracy, one of the main things is they're like, look, the government would never fabricate evidence like that. Like, there's just not that many psychos in the government, like maybe a few, but that's a compelling point. But if people believe what they're doing is genuinely the right thing and they're saving millions of lives by doing it and they better keep their mouths shut, that presents a different picture a little bit. So that's the second layer of the onion. The third layer is, you know, what actually happened. And that's, we can talk about that as we get to it, but
yeah. Well, I guess we'll keep moving on. Yeah. Like kind of the tie-in of who is Kennedy / you know, what enemies has he made kind of along the way.
Right. Okay. So let's just hit with the enemies. This is probably the easiest. So we've talked about Cuban exiles. We talked about anti-Castro Cubans. Cuban exiles, which is our anti-Castro. We talked about the Cuban government and the Russian government. Both of those are based on the official story, Mexico City. And then the fourth would be the CIA. That's a big one. And what people say specifically is the CIA was already working with, number five, the mafia, okay, and Cuban exiles. So there's this project called ZR Rifle to assassinate Fidel Castro. And it was led by Bill Harvey. And the idea, what you know, people who subscribe to this theory say, and I think it's a credible theory worth looking into, is that they took ZR Rifle, which is the CIA working with the mafia and Cuban exiles, and turned it from Castro inward against Kennedy. So that's basically the CIA plot idea. I mean, there's a lot of different ones. People believe crazy things. So anyway, but that's five. So five would be the mafia. And the mafia.
Real quick on the CIA, I want to back up. I do believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Kennedy broke up Operation Northwoods, correct? Which was a CIA projected plan, right?
He didn't approve it. I don't know if it was the CIA or if it was the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Okay. Well, I'm not sure.
Feds. But
yeah. The powers that be, yeah.
Yeah.
He declined that plan. So
yeah. And if I remember correctly, it was a little bit more than decline. Like, he was like offended it was even being proposed.
Yeah, so let's get to that. So okay, we talked about mafia as five. So six would be the Joint Chiefs, the military itself, right? They just wouldn't listen to him. You know what I mean? He didn't really have control of the CIA, but he also had a hell of a time getting the military to listen to him. So specifically, National Security Action Memorandum 263 to withdraw from Vietnam. He had been requesting that months and months and months in advance, and they just didn't get it done. So, I mean, they just were just defying him from withdrawing.
Which really echoes Trump too. Not to compare the two, sure. But Trump. No, sure. I don't remember which specific engagement. There was some engagement. Maybe it was serious. I don't remember. One of the ones. There was one that he was very clear, like, we're getting the fuck out, and they're like, okay, and then they just kind of didn't and played numbers games with him. So. Yeah, and then they bragged about it later to the press. Uh-huh. Like,
yeah, I recall that. You're right.
Yeah, that's, I can't remember which is wild. That, you know, because that is technically supposed to be within the purview of the president to be able to, you know, determine, you know, those type of engagements. So the idea, you know, people have this idea of what the government is, and then but then there's this real what the government is, because right. Like, you know, I don't know, for example, I remember, I think I was even talking to Clint the other day about something. I think we were talking about sovereign citizens. The people are like, well, theoretically in the Constitution, blah, 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 I don't have to do this. It's like, okay, well, yeah, maybe constitutionally this is right, but at the end of the day, what the law is what they enforce. It's not right. What you like, what is like what you in your head think.
Appeal it later.
Yeah. I'm sure you as a lawyer understand this. It's like, okay, right. Yeah, maybe I agree with you, but let's be real. This is not going to fly in court. Like, sure. Yeah. So like, they're not going to enforce this. So,
but, so we've got six so far. So we got Cuban exiles, Cuba, Russia, CIA, mafia, joint chiefs. That's six. All right.
Can we back up mafia? Cause we just mentioned mafia and we didn't really say why. I want to say why. I think I know a little bit why. Cause I know, I believe I remember correctly, his family, like you mentioned, prohibition, et cetera, et cetera. He kind of has roots in there. So I think they felt a little bit betrayed that he wasn't really completely on team mafia, but I'll let you present it.
So specifically, he was, beloved by the mafia in Chicago in particular, Sam Giancana. I mean, Nixon was a mafia guy. Okay. Nixon was the mafia's main guy because Nixon had reached out through this guy named Mayhew, Howard Hughes, like Howard Hughes' right-hand man, to the mafia, basically to work with the CIA on these operations. Cause the mafia had been, when, the revolution happened in Cuba and Castro took over and kicked out Batista, the mafia lost their casinos in Cuba. So that's why they cared about Cuba. So he had reached out. So Nixon was really pro mafia more than Kennedy was. But anyway, the specific issue is was what his brother Bobby was doing. I mean, he was coming for the mafia leaders, in particular Marcello. There's a restaurant in Columbus, Ohio called Marcello's, and I was getting Carlos Marcello. And he actually deported him to Guatemala. I don't think he's from Guatemala, and dropped him out of a helicopter.
Like Pinochet style or like survive style?
Like survival style.
Okay.
Like he got injured and then he had to basically like get back to civilization and he came back in the country and he's basically just like, he's gone. So he later confessed to killing JFK on tape in prison. So he's those tapes from the National Archives, they haven't been released. The audio tapes haven't been released, but the transcripts have been released. So, but then it comes down to like, there's a question of like what started the thing. So let's say there was a conspiracy. What started it rolling? And I mean, Marcello says that, you know, he did it. And I think it's true. He wanted him dead, but there's no way you could have covered all these things up without the involvement of the government, some government at a high level. So yeah, the mafia is definitely worth looking at, but they wanted to take out Bobby, but they realized they needed to take out John and then maybe Bobby if they had to, is the argument for the mafia.
And so on the Bobby thing, I do want to provide an emphasis and correct me if I'm wrong. I believe John, and I think this is actually a smart move, and I know a lot of people, and I'm not a big Trump fan, but a lot of people criticize Trump for it, but he brought his family a lot into the mix, and I know JFK kind of did the same thing, where the idea is, because like these are people you can trust. It's almost like maybe John F. Kennedy kind of had this idea of like, hey, I'm in this place, and I'm kind of in foreign territory, and these people aren't really doing what I'm wanting to, so I want to surround myself with trusted people, like family. So, because I know that's it seems to be a point that I see repeated frequently whenever I look into JFK, is that he brought in family and let them take on a larger role than typical when it came to presidents. Correct me if I'm wrong, because that's kind of a point, you know.
I know with Bobby, you know, Robert Kennedy in particular, he was relied on him intensely. I mean, the Cuban Missile Crisis were the two of them together. I mean, he was obviously his brother, and he's there in the White House with him, his top advisor, really. But the mafia, that was their main beef, is they were being attacked, right? So that's number seven. Number eight would be the FBI. The FBI is, I mean, so the argument, I mean, I've heard a lot of different arguments, but you know, J. Edgar Hoover was gay. And they had, you know, when pictures that made that clear. And at that time, that would have been, you know, a career ender for him.
Yeah.
So, So anyway, I think he was worried that if this is one thing I've heard, if he is forced to continually to go hard after the mafia, they're going to expose him, because he didn't want to have to keep going after the mafia either. But then there's also just the, okay, even if that's not true, J. Edgar Hoover just wanted to be at the center of power. And he had a sort of an ongoing rivalry with the CIA, for sure. And that's, that is best illustrated by James Seibert and I forgot O'Neill's first name, but Seibert and O'Neill. He sent two FBI agents to the autopsy to take notes for Hoover that were just like his two personal guys. And so that's really revealing, because everything that they write is like consistent with what the Dallas doctor says and not consistent with the autopsy.
On the Hoover gay thing, from the little bits of like, especially like, to be fair, like I've looked at this a lot through like in conspiracy world, so maybe I'm wrong. It's my impression that Hoover was like flagrantly, not flagrantly in like a, but like he wasn't really putting too much effort in really concealing it, because to the extent that he was, he had dirt on everyone is the idea that I had, so that my impression too. And so he really wasn't trying too hard to hide it, because he was like, he was, God, I wish I remembered more of this, because I have looked at this before, but I know he did a lot of crazy shit like in that arena. And I have no problem with people being gay, but the idea was that he was so like, so brazen about it. Like, I'm not saying he was like a flaming in like, you know, in the White House or whatever, but he would openly do stuff that and not really put too much effort to conceal it, because he had dirt on everyone and he had control of the FBI. Like, this is the kind of person we're talking about. And Hoover is an interesting case. I know that for sure, but
yeah,
I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I just wanted to mention that for people out there, because I think that says something to the psyche of the individual we're talking about.
That's a deeper dive for me. Yeah. I mean, most of what I know about the FBI's involvement, aside from the investigation itself and specific FBI agents and specific FBI reports about specific things, I need to get my head around the J. Edgar Hoover angle. But the FBI is definitely another potential conspirator. Another one would be the Secret Service. So, oh my gosh, man, like I'm gonna upset a lot of people here, but I don't think that the driver shot him.
I always thought that was wild. I mean, I don't think that's that crazy. I honestly that's almost on par with like, I mean, maybe not to that extent, but like almost like people say like holograms for 9/11 or something.
Like, yes. So
it's silly.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And they go, so again, TikTok. All right. So I did an inventory of the comments. I'm like, what's the general vibe people are saying? This is an informal poll. I had like 500 comments or something. I'm like, let's take a little informal poll. What is this? And it's like, I would say probably 20% of people are just, they go so hard on the Secret Service did it. And they all cite the same documentary that's currently on Netflix. There's a documentary on Netflix about how the Secret Service did it. Okay. And they go, look, if you look at this Zapruder film, look, this driver, he turns around and JFK hit her, and the whole Warren Report is true. Every part of the Warren Report is true. Okay. But incidentally, the Secret Service driver turned around and accidentally blew his head off. Okay. But the problem is none of the ballistics match that. And the bigger issue is the federal government's not going to cover, like, you can't cover it up if it was an accident. They would just be like, oh, what a tragedy. Maybe he wouldn't have to serve time somehow, but like they would throw that guy under the bus in a split second.
Yeah. So, it's just that would be way too flagrant. Like it's because like, I mean, not that maybe they wouldn't know they're being videotaped, but the idea that you could, inconspicuously just shoot him from that angle. Like, it's just like, I don't know. It's silly. Like, and I
people say it's an accident. People say that it was an accident. That's what the argument is. That's what it's so wild.
Just wildly firing. It makes no sense.
the bigger, more credible. There's a guy named Vince Palamara, and he's the guy. Palamara. He's got a great YouTube channel. He's got a lot of awesome, like original content on there, and some research content. he's the guy on the Secret Service. Everything has to do with the Secret Service and the Kennedy assassination. He's interviewed all of the living Secret Service agents going back to like the 90s. So basically he kind of lays out a lot of, you know, his views on things. And this is something that I haven't looked at the primary evidence. I'm kind of just relying a lot on what Vince says, but he's definitely an incredible guy. It's basically the issues with the Secret Service are around, why did the driver stop? There's like 70 people that say that the car stopped, right? And then there's a photo that shows the taillights. But if you watch the Zapruder film, it doesn't stop. So that raises questions. Well, what the hell's going on here?
And this is also after the first shot, right? That's the idea, is that it's already been shot. He stops. Yeah. And to be fair, like, obviously you could say rationally the move would be to speed up and get the fuck out of there. But I mean, people don't always react rationally in situations like that. I could totally see someone stopping to try to be like, assess the situation. So sure, I mean, exactly. it's silly. Like, you know,
that's true.
Yeah.
The Secret Service would always, and this is something that happens, that's happened recently. Secret Service would always like get hammered the night before and all be hungover, but that's not really disputed in any way. And it's just the truth. Okay.
Yeah. And I do want to make a point too, because people may make the point like, well, they're Secret Service and they're super trained and blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't know. I did 11 years active duty military. I mean, do me wrong. I was just a grease monkey. I was a mechanic. But like, and you're a lawyer, like my impression of the government in general is that's not always the case. Don't get me wrong, especially like I was never in some elite unit, but even my impression of like quote unquote elite units is like when you're in government, it doesn't always work like that. Like you don't like, yeah, I mean, maybe like maybe they're all, you know, highly tuned machines, but I kind of doubt it. I also feel like there's still a chance that they're human. They're going to make mistakes. They're all, it's also, they, a lot of times we glorify things to make them to be what they want. We want them to be. So
The other thing on the Secret Service, on the day of the assassin in the motorcade, usually there were motorcycles that would be in front of, like immediately to the right and left of the car, not just behind it. They were behind it like a flying V. Okay. If you look at this Zapruder film. But there should have been next to it. That's how it was in other motorcades. Yeah. And they also didn't have anyone positioned in these buildings. So there's no Secret Service agents that weren't part of the motorcade, which gets real weird when you have three witnesses who say they saw a Secret Service agent flash a badge at the top of the grassy knoll immediately after the shots were fired.
Okay. All right. Now, what would be the motivations? Because I mean, you said they had the possible means, although I find that to be a little bit incredulous. But
Secret Service.
Yeah. What would be their motivation? Do they have any motivation to have issues with them, or just maybe they were in cahoots with other agencies? But
yeah. What? One second. Sorry. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. I'm right behind I'm near a sump pump and it's raining outside. So the Secret Service, there's no scenario where the Secret Service did it alone. That's not a thing. Okay. The Secret Service is like an add-on. It's like a topping to your ice cream cone. Okay. But again, I don't want to get too far, out of turn. Is the issues with the Secret Service are just more of, a couple of individuals. You know, there are some key people there who weren't there. And I would just refer anybody that's interested in that side of it to Vince Palomara. He's got all the primary information. We'll get to that eventually, but that's, you know, probably 100 podcasts away. And who we not covered yet? Texas Oil. So that's a big one. He was going to do away with the oil depletion allowance. Which basically it would have cost all these people that owned all this oil $100 million over a period of years, I think was the number. So it would have been a real, you know, material change, and Johnson ended up not doing that. So that's another thing. And then there's Vietnam and all that, but that sort of goes back to the military. It's kind of the same thing. So those are the key players. People say I went to the JFK conference this year in Dallas, and the Citizens Against Political Assassinations, CAPA. And there's a guy there who thinks Israel did it.
Yeah.
But there's just not any, there's not any evidence of that.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Israel has done some fucky shit over the years, but I mean, well, you got to provide me some evidence, you know?
Like, yeah, you have to. And so, I mean, I'm just trying to think of who else. I mean, people talk about the Umbrella Man, which is interesting. The Umbrella Man is interesting, but the Umbrella Man is not related to the, I mean, maybe related to the assassination, possibly. I don't know. But he certainly wasn't about to shoot a dart from his umbrella. I'll say that. So anyway, those are the key. Sorry, I'm all over the place, but those are the main suspects, if you will. And then Oswald. And the argument against Oswald is that he was a first of all, he's just a terrible person. He hates everybody he's ever interacted with. Beats his wife. And he was a communist, and in fact, he's handing out pamphlets for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee in New Orleans. And he basically, you know, he defected to the Soviet Union. Like, what more do you want? And basically, he's just this crazy communist, and he wanted to kill the president because he wanted to show that he could be somebody and he could really get back at capitalism or whatever. So that's the main argument. Is just, it's a little bit that he was crazy, and it's a little bit that, like, he wanted to kill him to make a name for himself, kind of argument.
Yeah. Well, all right. We, like I said, we're going to do characters, but I mean, we're already an hour and I'm fine with that. I think maybe next episode we'll probably focus on Oswald. Maybe the following episode, maybe we'll even focus more on Oswald and kind of get into the minutiae of that as opposed to just focusing the characters now. And I'm fine with, you know, doing it this way. This is completely cool. This is great. But I do have a couple Patreon questions I did want to bring up. So, you know, just so people know, if you're on the $5 level on Patreon, I do put out for every episode I put out, you get to put out questions if you'd like to. I also give you a code because of the private streams. You can just drop a code in there to let me know you're on the $5 level. I give you a little, like, whatever code. I forget what this one was. And you can put it in the stream, and if you show up for the stream, I'll read it, you know, kind of treat it like a super chat. But this is what I have. What do you think is the significance of General LeMay supervising the autopsy? I mean, I don't even know who General LeMay is, so maybe you can illuminate us on that. And, you know, and there's a follow-up on after that, and that'll be it.
Curtis LeMay was the head of the Air Force. He did, in fact, he was there in the autopsy room. We know that from one of the orderlies who came forth to the Assassination Records Review Board, Paul O'Connor, I believe his name is, and basically there was a guy who was smoking a cigar in the autopsy room, and so the orderly walks over. You know, the doctor's like, "Tell him to put that out. It's ridiculous." The orderly walks over and says, "Sir, please put that cigar out. You know, we're trying to do an autopsy here." And LeMay takes a big puff of it and just blows it right in the guy's face. And he doesn't say a word. And then he's like, I read the name, and it said LeMay. Right, he's like, I knew who he was, so I walked away. And we know that. So to answer the question, what's the significance? I mean, the significance is that doesn't look good if you want to say that all the evidence is pure and in good faith. I think that's the, I mean, I think it doesn't prove, it's not a smoking gun. It says, oh, there must be a conspiracy because LeMay was there. But first of all, what would have been better would be if they had someone who had ever done an autopsy of a gunshot wound do the autopsy. The two doctors that they got were two of the youngest doctors. Humes and Boswell, and then they brought in a forensic pathologist, Pierre Fink, who actually had some experience with gunshot wounds the next day. But they, I mean, and even Warren Report defenders will say, you know, the autopsy was completely botched. But yeah, back to LeMay, I mean, they would have had the right way to do it would be have someone who has experience doing this. And certainly not have, you know, one of the potential alleged conspirators quarterbacking what to do next. And because they're actually telling him, you know, he was overseeing the autopsy. What was he doing? He was saying, stop, don't make that incision. That's enough. Move on to the next one. It was like literally, you know, giving orders out. And all this came out during, I believe it was Pierre Fink's testimony, maybe some of the other doctors during the Garrison investigation. So this is all stuff that's on the record.
So we had the head of the Air Force and two young, impressionable, probably easily to manipulate, like young doctors that were right. heading, that were doing the autopsy.
And so a lot, there was like 25 people total in there. It was real crowded.
Yeah. So that does paint a picture for sure. Now the follow-up question they said, which I mean, who made the call that the military would be controlling the autopsy? Do you know that?
That's a good question. I don't.
Okay.
I don't know. You'd be speculating. I mean, the best research on this that I've seen is a guy named Doug Horn, H-O-R-N-E. He was the head researcher for the Assassination Records Review Board of all military records. So his job for between 1994 and 1998, and he had subpoena power, was to basically go around to the military and get all the JFK documents and then depose people that, you know. So he found out all kinds of crazy stuff. When it comes to LeMay, one of the things he found out is that LeMay had told everyone that he was in Michigan that day. He told his family he was hunting in Michigan that day. And he actually was visiting some top secret Canadian Air Force base. And we know because Doug Horn actually got the flight logs during the ARRB. So, you know, and there was his assistant was in Dallas with the president and was trying urgently to reach LeMay, but he couldn't reach LeMay. And LeMay landed an hour and a half before Kennedy's body arrived. So he was definitely there and overseeing it. Who told him to do that? I would be speculating. I don't know.
Okay. Well, all right. I would go further, but I think if we dug into any more, we'd be buying off a whole lot more that we can chew in this episode. I think probably the next episode we'll probably start going to Oswald. Can you go ahead and drop your plugs, let people know where to find you, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera. And we'll get out of here.
Yeah. Thanks, Jose. Solving JFK podcast is what it's called. And we're available anywhere you can listen to podcasts. We are on YouTube, but it's mostly an audio thing. If you go to Instagram or TikTok, I have a lot of video content. I try to put out a 2 to 3 minute video once a week that deals with whatever the week's episode is. And we're going to look at all the evidence in the Texas School Book Depository building, at Parkland, at the J.D. Tippit murder scene, the Texas theater, and then the Dallas jail. That's what we're looking at season one. And then we go, what are the open questions? Where does this lead us? What do we have to look at next? So that's it, man. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about it.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on. I would highly suggest that I've checked out all your content. You hit me up and you're like, hey, you know, JFK is hot. Let's talk about this. And I checked out all your content. I can verify it's, you know, it's fairly covered. You know, definitely you do it, like, you know, you provide all the sources, et cetera, et cetera. I would definitely highly suggest it to anyone. But for those who, you know, want to, you know, check out more of my stuff, if it's like, say, your first time going on, I'm on YouTube, on the major auto podcasts, obviously, as well. If you want to follow me, you can go to @TowerGangJose. I just changed it, instead of that stupid Senor Jose thing, because I've been, you know, this is like my third account on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook if you want to back up. I know, you know, if you really want to follow me and you want to, you know, just make sure in case I get nuked off Twitter again, you have a backup. I'm Jose Galison on there. If you want to support me, patreon.com/NoWayJose2020. Make sure to hit that like button, share, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. I appreciate you coming on, Matt. I will definitely follow up and do more episodes. You know, we'll go as deep as feels we need to.
Sounds good.
20 of these, we'll see. I appreciate your time. We'll definitely be talking about Oswald more probably next episode, and I'm looking forward to that. Oswald's a curious case for sure. And with that, we are.
All right. Cool.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.